Welcome back to On Texas Football, folks. It is the Friday 1 o'clock live stream. Thank you guys for joining us. It's always a football Friday here at On Texas Football. I'm joined by Jerry Hamilton. He's the man. Y'all already know him. Y'all may not know, but Jerry Hamilton actually discovered Rod Babers. I owe that man a debt of gratitude. That is a true story. That is not BS. And CJ Bogle, lifetime Longhorn. CJ Bogle, always in the know, all things Texas Longhorns, especially in the recruiting realm. I want to get both of these guys' thoughts about a big recruiting weekend coming up. We'll get into that. Also, of course, we'll talk Texas spring football. Can't believe we're more than halfway through Texas spring football already, man. It is flying by, but time flies when you're having fun. We'll also get into an ESPN ranking. You guys were talking about this before the show. ESPN ranking of the best coaches in college football. We'll see where Steve Sarkisian ranks among the top 10 best coaches in college football based on these ESPN rankings. We're going to have some fun with that. And, of course, all your questions, all your super chats. You got anything you want to interrupt the show with, just throw it out there, and we will interrupt the show with a super chat. But we'll get to all your questions as well. Really excited about the live stream today. Jerry, what's going on, brother? You're always out and about. I never know where you are. So look, you got a different background every time.
Hey, Rod, I'm out and about. Yeah, I got some stuff I got to do today. But I got to be honest. We have a little recruit just checked in today. Get a little hookem from Peter Longy, right? Peter, is that you, offensive lineman out of San Fran? If so, break your record. When are you going to be in Austin? E. Kim, is Texas no longer considering Dylan Battle? He's down the list a little bit. I think Texas will go out and watch him again in May, but I think he's down the list a little bit. But a huge visit weekend coming up at Texas. More than 20 combined five-star and four-stars in the 25 and 26 classes will be in Austin. Some of those guys start getting in tonight. We have a thread up right now on texasfootball.com, our weekend visit thread, and I already posted some nuggets in there, so we'll get started with this. DeCorian Moore will be in town later tonight after the conclusion of the District 6A 11 track meet that's going on right now in Waxahachie. He runs at 2:30 in a relay and may have one other event, but him and his mom will get into town tonight. John Mills, offensive lineman from St. Ignatius in San Francisco, he's flying in with his father and one of the coaches at St. Ignatius. His flight gets in at about 7 tonight. So some of those guys will come in tonight. Some of those guys, maybe the Houston area, some of those Dallas guys, they'll drive in the morning. But huge visit weekend coming, it's gonna be a big one around a scrimmage at 11 a.m. Saturday in DKR.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a lot of nuggets coming out of that scrimmage. I can't wait. First big scrimmage for spring ball for the guys. CJ, I'll throw it to you really quickly here early on because we got a super chat already. Just kind of throwing out there. Boom. All right. To get the slow start off the right way. Jay Lee, thank you very much. We appreciate all your support and we appreciate the super chat. CJ, I'll let you throw it up here first. Texas defensive player's dad just claimed on the live stream that Texas already has their D-line guy and that he is from Michigan. Hey, man, we address even the rumors and the conjecture around here. What are your thoughts? You know anything about this? This is some wild speculation.
It is speculation, but, again, it's kind of the fun part, especially when the players and their families start getting on Instagram and Facebook Live and keep going. I mean, that's fun. But right now, it's all a waiting game for Texas when it comes to the defensive line and what kind of attracts out of the portal. Remember, it was Kenneth Grant at Michigan who did start following Sarkisian, Tavondre Sweat, and the Texas football accounts on Instagram about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. That was, you know, it caused a bit of a stir. And as soon as it, you know, made the timeline, it quickly was an unfollow for Kenneth Grant. So a little bit of, you know, speculation in that regard. But again, until you see an announcement from either Kenneth Grant or his representation of him entering the portal, it's all conjecture at the moment. Again, that portal opens up in 10 days. April 15th is when these names officially enter the portal and teams can start communicating with them. Again, the Texas spring game is April 20th, so you could potentially have a portal, you know, prospect on campus for a visit that time. So we'll see. But until then, it's all conjecture.
And again, here's another part of that. Any of the guys named is the conjecture part of this. If guys go in the portal, if they don't have a no contact rule, game on. If they have that contact wide open, it's a little different game.
Yeah. No doubt about that. All right, thank you, Jay Lee, for the super chat. We appreciate it. All right, guys, before and we'll get back to some of the questions, we'll get to some of the other topics and some spring practice discussion as well and talk about the big scrimmage coming up this weekend. Who we expect to separate coming out in that scrimmage. Coaches, trust me, with a small sample size of spring, these scrimmages, they're like basically, you know, that's like it's not the final exam, which the spring game is, but it's definitely one of those big tests you got during the semester. You got two or three of them. This is one of those big tests for the guys. But guys, there's a big news, and usually it's not huge news when you get a punter and a kicker for Texas to come on board. But this one might be Jeff Banks gets another weapon, and he's from Austin Westlake, so a local product. Kicker punter Spencer Barnett. Recently decommitted from the Colorado State Rams, and apparently, according to numerous sources, he will be a preferred walk-on at the University of Texas. Is he a better, I'll ask you, Jerry, better punter or a better kicker in this sense?
He's a kicker. He's a kicker, and he's a good one. I mean, I think we have a video coming up that CJ put out. He was just one yard shy of a 60-yarder in a game this year. But look, if you have a strong NIL program, then getting a kicker of this ilk as a preferred walk-on is very, very good. Again, one of the top – there it is, 59-yarder against Ridgepoint.
Wow.
That's a playoff game, or it was a pre-district game, but those teams don't play in district, guys. So that was a 59-yarder there.
Wow.
And look, even Ridge Point had somebody back to return. I think that's Dane Jones, a 25 receiver. They're like, oh, he ain't making this. We're going to send somebody back to return that kick six Auburn style. Now that guy, that receiver looked turned around and watched that ball go through the uprights. That's when you just got a good kicker.
That's incredible. You don't see 59 very often in the NFL level, let alone college, but high school, that's remarkable. So Texas, again, finding ways, especially out of the Austin area, to find impactful players for their special teams. Obviously, Burt Auburn now coming out of Austin Regents, you're looking at, you know, some impactful guys without necessarily taking up scholarship positions, which we've talked about in the past. Texas currently sitting at 89 scholarships, got to be below 85 whenever the fall comes rolling around. So keeping these guys as preferred walk-ons, but still treating them right in the NIL world is the best of all worlds here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're right, though, about the NIL opportunities here at Texas as well. It's why you get some of those preferred walk-ons. I'll say this, too, which is, and I'm not really sure exactly who's going to be the punter here at Texas. Do we know who the punter is going to be at Texas? Is that something that...
Yeah, it's kind of in the balance. Ian Ratliff, a walk-on from Atascocita, he's a Power 5 level punter. I saw him in high school. He's going to have competition, obviously. He didn't go into the spring as a favorite to be the punter, by the way. He's done pretty well this spring. Okay. But Michael Kern from St. Thomas Aquinas signed in December. He was not an early enrollee, so he is not here now, which brings in the question that punting job a little bit. I think Texas could go in the portal for a punter as well. That's on the table. They're going to get that thing figured out. And the crazy thing about that, Rod, they're actually going to have depth at that position for the first time ever.
Wow. Yeah. Jeff Banks, who's done a great job with the special teams. Imagine him now probably having some of the deepest special teams positions and groups that he's had in a really, really long time with the speed at the return game. And also, since the roster is so deep, your coverage teams are going to be fantastic this year. Just athletes literally all throughout your special teams groups. Okay. So we'll get back to some of the questions. So thank you guys for those. We also will get into the ranking. I want to get into this a little bit later on, the ESPN ranking of the top 10 coaches in college football. We're going to have some fun with that. But the Saturday scrimmage, everybody's really excited about this Saturday scrimmage, guys, as well. They should be one of the big chances for this team and to really showcase all the different athletes that they have. We have such an athletic roster now. What are your thoughts? I'll start with you, CJ, in the scrimmage. Who do you expect to be hearing about after the scrimmage of them having a showcase performance, or those guys really separating and elevating themselves in the scrimmage? Who do you expect to be hearing about?
Well, it might not be a specific guy, but it's going to be a specific group. And I know we've talked in length about the improved secondary and cornerbacks this year and what we expect from them this fall. But I'm looking at this offense, especially at the wide receiving spot, it's got to be a big day for them, because guess who's on the sideline? It's your one, your two, your three, yep. and your fourth top prospects on the wide receiving board for the 2025 cycle, especially DeCorian Moore, who we expect, should he pick Texas, would be an instant playmaker on the field for the Longhorns during his tenure here. It's got to be an impressive day for Isaiah Bond, Jonte Cook, you know, Ryan Wingo, just to showcase Texas has versatility. They have depth, and they can, you know, kind of get those guys the ball down the field very often and early. I'm also looking at Arch Manning. I think it has to be a big day for him because those guys who, should they pick Texas, that's who would be throwing them the football. It's a good selling point. All it is, hey, you know, quarterback's a big part of your recruiting class. You know, you hear about it all the time with wide receivers when they commit. I want to go play with a good quarterback. I got to make sure the quarterback in my class is talented. That's a big part of it. Well, it certainly helps and it expedites the process as a wide receiver when that quarterback's already on campus and you know that he's going to be really good. So for Arch and that receiving group, to me, big, big opportunity for Sarkisian to kind of showcase his offense in front of DeCorian Moore, Kelshon Johnson, Khalik Lockett, and Jamie French.
A couple things there. I got some thoughts as well. On the porch, Sorrell, 88 is great. Yes, he is. Living rent-free in UT. When is Juan Gaston from Georgia and also Nick Brooks coming in? Both scheduled June 14th through 16th. Nick Brooks, a spring game. Juan Gaston, hey, both those guys may be Georgia leans actually right now, but that just means you're recruiting the right lineman. Juan Gaston's very much a long shot. We'll see what happens with Nick Brooks down the line here. But as far as the scrimmage goes, I think running backs. Look, C.J. Baxter, Rod, he threw C.J. Baxter in front of the mic yesterday, Sark did. That says something. Again, I know what Texas feels inside the building about Cedric Baxter, and yesterday's kind of more of that. There's a feeling that he's going to have a big year, and that doesn't mean Jaden Blue's not going to have a big year either, but there's a feeling that Cedric Baxter's taking some big steps this offseason, and Anthony Hill going to the mic as well. So I'm looking at running back because I think the run game, I talked to somebody this morning in the car when I was driving a little bit. I think the run game is doing pretty well right now. I think things are coming along there with the run game. So I expect to hear about a couple of running backs having big days. And that doesn't just mean I'm going right up Rod's alley here. That doesn't just mean taking a handoff. That means that the backfield, a little pony package. I think the running backs are going to be talked about.
That's beautiful. I even I asked Rojo about the pony package yesterday. We're talking to him for our third Longhorns podcast. So shout out. We're going to end up having a Rojo episode in the future. But I asked him about the pony package. He was like, oh, yeah, we were always trying to ask Sark to, you know, nudge him a little bit. Hey, coach, get us out there at the same time. The pony package. So hopefully we will see more of that. I'm going to I know it's stereotypical. I'm going to stick with the DBs, man. I don't think we've heard enough about the DBs. In spring so far. I mean, we've heard how, you know, we've talked about how they transform their bodies. We've talked about how these guys, they're expected to take a leap because they have so much talent now and that defensive backfield, they have so much experience. They're going up against a great group of wide receivers. Hell, they were going up against two first-round wide receivers last year. So these guys, honestly, have had reps against high-level competition. If they're going to take a leap, this is going to be the year. Now, I know that actually comes at the – that's going to actually come, you know, honestly, at the expense of the offense if they're going to have a big day. But hopefully they'll win their fair share. I'd like this to be more balanced in these battles going between this high-powered offense and a defense that's growing and a defense that we expect to be one that still can be effective, but this time through by different means, through the secondary being a strength on the edges. So I'm going to go with the secondary and make some plays on the ball, get a couple of interceptions, get some PBUs, see if they can hold their own against this really deep wide receiving core. So shout out to
Rod's point, I think safety's going to end up – we're going to be talking about this as the most improved position on the team next year. I think that's going to be a theme for all of us.
I would love that. That'd be huge.
And that's why it's so exciting coming into the spring game is, Texas lost a lot of pieces to the NFL out of that receiving group, but they've also added. And there's also a lot – I would expect a deeper group of speed across the board at any given point on this offense than what we saw a year ago. And as a result, your safeties are going to be tested. You know, can you keep kind of the ceiling on the defense without getting the roof blown off? That's going to be important going into the SEC, where you're going to be facing guys like Berrien Brown and the guys at Alabama, Georgia, even Moose Muhammad, you know, really talented down the field playmaking guys that you see week in and week out. So getting acclimated to that type of skill set early going to be very important for this new talented and very athletic safety group.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm interested to see who that, because they like to rotate their safeties. We know that Makuba, Derek Williams, Taff Daddy, that's going to be the three. Do we know the fourth guy is going to be in that safety rotation?
To me, it's Jelani McDonald.
That's a good – I'm glad you bring it up. We actually have a question here about Jelani McDonald. It's perfect timing. Ryan Nelson here says, Jelani McDonald update, still only 18. Where do we think he ends up getting drafted with that special frame? Wow, so it's a really big Jelani McDonald fan here. But continue, CJ. I mean, do you think he wins that kind of fourth spot in that rotation? Because that's still up for grabs. I don't know if anybody's really solidified themselves as to be that other guy in that rotation.
Yeah, I do think he ends up kind of as that fourth guy in the group. We saw him early in spring practice during the media availability. He looks like he plays that role. You know, he has the perfect body for a deep safety. He has that kind of skill set that allows him to spin down to the box with enough athleticism and speed to play the field if necessary as well. So it's kind of a perfect fit for him at safety, having background as a cornerback, having played some linebacker a year ago as well, and now kind of finding that middle ground at safety. Kind of, again, that skill set to me with Jelani, with the length, the athleticism, and the pure size, I think, is perfect for him into this safety role. Of course, Xavier Phils to me is going to push him, but to me, Jelani McDonald's too athletic to keep off the field this long.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Great breakdown there. All right, before we get back to it, I know we got a lot of questions rolling in. We'll get to those, but we got to give a shout out to our fantastic sponsor. Very grateful for Flat Creek Estate Winery. 11 awards in 30 days, including double gold Grand Reserve and Texas Grand Reserve at the Houston Rodeo. Flat Creek Estate Winery is raking in the awards, and it's just a few minutes away from the heart of Austin. Select bottles of the wines by Flat Creek Estate are now available at your local Specs, and now you can get a taste of what they're all about. Flat Creek Estate is also a gorgeous venue hosting events for the entire family all spring long. Take in the Eclipse coming up next week with a bottle in hand, and their winemaker's dinner on April 11th is the perfect date night. Eat, drink, and be awesome at Flat Creek Estate. For more information, please visit flatcreekestate.com. That's flatcreekestate.com. I guarantee you, as soon as I can get a babysitter, I am going to treat wifey to a date night or a staycation out at Flat Creek Estate, because I've heard great things. I've already been on the website, and my wife loves wine, so I'm going to surprise her. Well, I guess I say I'm a surprise. I'm telling the world here, but I'm going to do it. But I'm going to get that done. I suggest you do the same. The weather here in Central Texas is beautiful. It's beautiful today. It'll be beautiful this entire spring. So make your plans to go visit Flat Creek Estate. We appreciate them very much.
Hey, eat, drink, and stay awesome. I mean, sign me up.
Great song. Yeah, great slogan. I agree with that.
Hey, I'm going to hit a couple of questions here that we had during that great read. Any inside info on why Anthony Deuce Williams decommitted, and is Texas recruiting Ty Haywood out of Denton? So on Deuce Williams, I think we had left him at On Texas Football. We had left him off the visit list for a reason. We had a feeling this was coming. Kids have to operate on their own timeline. And this doesn't diminish him as a player. Look, Anthony Williams out of Shadow Creek, he's going to officially visit TCU, Baylor, maybe even Florida. He's a really good prospect. I think when Johnny Nansen was hired, the calculus on what Texas was looking for, needing in this class, changed a little bit, especially when Nansen and Texas will continue to recruit Matea Tongay, the linebacker out of San Clemente that it committed to USC. These USC commitments they're exactly solid right now, guys. One of those guys is going to decommit next week probably already. I don't even know if the commitment ink is dry on that one. But Texas likes some longer limb guys, but also there's two tremendous 25s in Texas, Elijah Barnes and Riley Pettishot. And then there's a kid that's really popped up, Jonathan Cunningham. I love him on tape out of North Crowley. He's visiting April 11th. When Nansen was hired, he went through North Crowley, looked at him, liked him a lot. Sark and Choice came back through. They offered. He'll be on campus April 11th. He was at the junior day January 20th. So there's another linebacker in Texas Texas really likes, but they want those longer lever, very instinctive guys that can play multiple spots. On Ty Haywood, that's just a guy that, look, Texas has made some contact with him. I'm not sure he's ever been a top priority at tackle, but he's not a guy that's actually reciprocated the interest. Bottom line, can that change? Sure. To this point, as of late March, he hadn't reciprocated any interest. So just you're not going to get them all, and that's one kid that just has not had Texas high on his list. And by the way, we got, yes, some question about Wardell Mack. Wardell Mack, we've heard some good things about him at corner. So we hear he's having a good spring practice already.
Yep. Also a guy that's gotten some looks on the inside at nickel as well. So
versatile. Ashton Holloman, welcome back.
Hey. Hey, I love the fact that they're cross-training all the DBs, though. Yes. You've seen all the guys. Everybody seems to have another position that they're being cross-trained at. I think that's good stuff in the secondary. That tends says, come on, Rod, let us know what you think of Xavier Fields and me. You're number 21. Hey, I'm glad you brought this up. Thank you, that tense, because I do believe now is the time. Now is the time for me to lose my crown as the greatest number 21 in the history of Texas football. I do believe that now, and I know we've had some guys where it's been, you know, at one point, I think Jay Witt had number 21 at one point.
Now this Keaton Crawford disrespect's out of control.
Yeah.
Great point. That's what I'm saying. It, listen, Blake Gideon, hey, shout out to all the number 21s. Is it Grady Kavanis? Hey, listen, it's a loyal club we got. But I do believe that Xavier Filsimi's got what it takes. Now, this is the thing. This is why I'll always probably be the greatest number 21 in Texas football history. Because guys don't think the number 21 is cool anymore. So when they do, you know, obviously get some skins on the wall, they change their number. They go to a single digit or a number they think is cooler. So that's why I'll probably always be able to brag about being the greatest number 21. But if Xavier Filsimi does not change his number, I do believe that he can go down as the greatest number 21 and at least greater than myself. There you go.
Hey, look, not only were you the best 21, but you were by a slight margin the fastest 21. Because Keaton Crawford, he could run. He couldn't play safety, but he could run.
He can run. You were
fastest, too. That'd be a good race, though. Somebody, Mike D. Santa, missed the information about Kenneth Grant. We look, it's all conjecture right now. That's what we kind of said. We'll see what happens. My main thing with all these guys, when they enter the portal, is this. If they enter the portal with the no contact box checked, game on. If that no contact box is not checked, negotiations on. Bye, everybody.
Negotiations. Oh, man, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, they appreciate that. So I'll keep all the questions coming in, guys. We appreciate all the participation right now. We're also going to get to – I want to get to this top 10 list because ESPN ranked the top 10 coaches in college football going into the 2024 season. And they give some love to Steve Sarkisian, guys. This was pretty interesting. They have Steve Sarkisian as the seventh best coach in college football. What say you, gentlemen? Too high, too low, just right for Steve Sarkisian at seven.
I mean, it's an interesting list, okay? I can say this. Mike Norvell's the best coach to not be in a playoff. Well, sorry, I had to bring that up, FSU fans. One wow. In particular that's listening. Look, I don't know on this. I agree with 1-2 right now. I do agree with that. I think Kyle Whittingham's a tremendous coach. I think all the ACC coaches voted on this, and they voted Dabo, so when they beat him, it makes him look better and get more money. That's my initial takeaway. But, look, I mean, if I'm Dabo, I'm a little disrespected that Kyle Whittingham's ahead of me. I know it's gone rough lately, and by rough meaning you're only winning 9, but he has 2 national championships at Clemson. That's true. Won 2 national championships without anybody, an offensive lineman, getting drafted in the first 3 rounds. I mean, so – he's probably should be 3 on resume right now. I think Oregon is Dan Lanning better than Sark right now? Should he be ahead of Sark? I mean, he had two shots to beat Washington and get in the playoff last year.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't know, reinvent. Sark's had more lows on his resume than Dan Lanning, right? He's had some more lows in terms of down years. That's because he picked up programs essentially and had to reconstruct them and rebuild them to a certain extent, especially with Texas in 2021, going back to his time at Washington. So maybe that's what they're considering, that in terms of the basement of Sark's career so far. He has hit the basement a few more times than a guy like Dan Lanning. But I'm with you. I think it's an interesting debate. Kalen DeBoer, though, getting the love at number two, best coach in college football. It just shows you, yeah, I mean, and Sark faced off. Sark almost beat him twice. The close is not good enough. Kalen DeBoer, I agree. I think he's a next-level coach. We'll see at Bama if he can do more with more, because I think he's a guy that's kind of done more with less in the spots that he's been in. But Kalen DeBoer getting a lot of love here. I'm with you, though. Dabo probably disrespect. I think Dabo's fallen out of favor lately because in the new landscape of college football, he doesn't seem to be a very progressive coach. And he's fallen out of favor. So maybe that's a perception thing. I don't think it's a resume thing. Right. That's a perception thing more than anything.
Well, yeah. If you just refuse to use the portal, right? At a blue blood or major university, I mean, I'm not sure you're. I get it. You've won your way, but what made Nick Saban so great is he adapted with the times in everything, offensively, defensively, recruiting wise, whatever he had to. He was always adaptive. Dabo's fighting adaptive right now.
It's funny looking at this, which coaches have, you know, recently coached their way off of the hot seat and which ones are still kind of there now. Norvell coming into this year was kind of a make or break year for him in a way, in the sense that, you know, you see the hype around Deion in which Florida State passed on Deion to go get Mike Norvell or hold on to him. So that's interesting. Ryan Day at 10, I think, is probably – fair, I guess, if you've considered his on-field winnings so far, but shortcomings in the sense of what he's expected to do on a national scale. But the other thing I wanted to mention here is I'm glad Kyle Whittingham got his flowers as well, as is Lance Leipold. You listen, winning 8 games, 9 games, and going to a bowl at Kansas has been one of the most challenging things we've seen in college football over my lifetime. So credit to Lance Leipold, because it doesn't – again, it feels like that program, at least in the Big 12 – is here to stay for a little bit. And I think that's more a testament to Lance Leipold, the X's and O's that he's been able to kind of construe on the field, but also the message off the field to keep these guys from transferring or leaving the minute that, you know, they start getting some shine on them. So credit to him. I'm a big fan of Lance Leipold.
You know, what's interesting to me, do y'all think Ohio State fans, do you think when they look at that, they think their guy's too high or too low? That's an interesting one, because look, I mean, I'll say this: Ryan Day is one of the few coaches that's been thrown out trying to go home without a throw from left field yet. I mean, he started out on third base and hasn't got home. He keeps getting thrown out at home. So, of all these guys, to have him behind Leipold's interesting. I'd like to know what Ohio State thinks. But here's the other thing: which coach here has the most pressure this year?
Mm.
That's number 10, Ryan Day.
Yes. No question.
I'll tell you who's number two on the most pressure is number two. And then after that, it's Lane Kiffin with the most pressure. I mean, look, fair or not, somebody asked, where's Brian Kelly? I mean, to me, Brian Kelly should be in the top 10 somewhere. He took Notre Dame to 2 college football playoffs, right? I mean, he's a very good coach, probably going to be a Hall of Fame coach. He should be on this list somewhere as a pure football coach. But look, Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Day have a ton of pressure. And I think Kalen DeBoer will answer all that pressure. I think the guy's a great coach. He's won literally everywhere he's ever been. He's got a lot of pressure year one, because you go 9-3 and people are going to be throwing their hands up in the air at Alabama. That's just – but he knows what he's getting into there. But Ryan Day, guys, he on this list, he has the most pressure on him by far.
Totally agree, because – and all the pressure is centered around one game. Beating Michigan. Now, he's got to do what he's done up until that point, and he's kind of a prisoner of his own excellence. But if you can't beat Michigan, post sign-stealing scandals, Harbaugh gone, them losing, I don't know how many guys to the NFL that's going to get drafted. I don't know, 15 or something, or whatever hell number they'll have guys drafted, some ridiculous number. But, yeah, if he doesn't do it this year with the upgrade in the OC with Chip Kelly, and some of the upgrades and what they've done in the transfer portal, because they've been all in there too. I agree. It's crazy to think it, but he would be on the hot seat even after all the success he's had. Got to beat your rival. Ask Mack Brown about it. Mack Brown was winning 10 games and not beating Oklahoma, and Longhorn fans were saying the same thing. Hey, this guy might not be the coach for Texas, because he can't beat Bob Stoops.
And here's the crazy thing about Ryan Day. Before he ever gets a crack at Michigan this year, they play at Oregon. Can you imagine if he loses to Dan Lanning in year one in the Big Ten? Now here's the crazy thing that can save you. He could go 10-2 and be in the playoff and make a run to a national championship, which is different now, right?
Yep.
But his pressure's so amped up, he has to go play the guy that's ahead of him on this list, Dan Lanning, before he ever gets to play Michigan without Jim Harbaugh. So he's got a ton of pressure. You know, look, Kalen DeBoer's got a lot of pressure for the things we just said. I mean, it's extremely hard to follow the legend, not a legend, the legend. But I do think DeBoer over time is going to have great success at Alabama. I just think he's too good of a coach. You don't do what he's done everywhere he's been and change immediately. It's instant impact with him. And he's gonna have a hell of a run at Alabama. But 9-3 this year might get him a couple of boos.
Yeah. You know, no doubt about that. That's how Alabama fans roll. They expect excellence. But I think Kalen DeBoer's going to do just fine over time there. The last point I wanted to make about Ryan Day is by default, he, you know, in a way, the universe saved him from himself. You know, could you imagine going into this year with all of that talent, a brand new quarterback, and Bill O'Brien as your offensive coordinator?
Ooh.
That to me is a disaster waiting to happen. Yeah, specifically after having seen what he's done at the Texans and at Alabama, New England. All those championships that the Patriots and Alabama won in the past 20 years, guess how many Bill O'Brien has or was a part of? Zero. He didn't – I mean, I just don't think that he was that guy, and as a result of him taking a job elsewhere, I mean, now all of a sudden you're stuck with Chip Kelly, who's, in my eyes, a much better, much improved play caller. So universe looking at Ryan Day saying, listen, brother, we're going to give you this one. If you can't figure out against Michigan this year, you're on your own.
Hey, last thing on this, because I know we got to move on. I got to tell everybody about autograph. But what does Sark have to do to move up this list this year, guys? It is as simple as this guy has to win the national championship to get Texas home. Is it back-to-back playoff appearances? Mm-hmm. I mean, what does Sark have to do to navigate his way up here to finish number three?
The floor is making the SEC championship. After that, everything else is flowers to me. But to me, you have to at least be in that game if you want to jump into the top five, because you can look across the board. You can expect Oregon to probably be in that Big Ten championship this year. Dabo and Clemson is going to be in the ACC, probably against Norvell. So that, to me, is the number one indicator that, yeah, Sarkisian's a top five coach in the country. But you have to start winning championships and loading up that cabinet inside of Moncrief.
He can win like you said, get to the SEC or get to the Final Four again of the playoff, right? Because even if you don't make it to the SEC title game, say you're the third, fourth best team in the SEC, you still make it in. And I think from there, you have to win some big games to get to the Final Four. So I think it's Andor, because I like what Jerry said. Now you have a little bit more as a coach. You got a little bit more margin for error. We talked about this with Mack Brown, right? Mack Brown had a playoff back in his day, or at least a 12-team playoff, his legacy would be totally different.
Yes.
Because he had a chance at redemption after some of those disappointing losses to Tech or to Oklahoma or whoever it may be. So I think Sark, he's got a little bit more margin for error. So if he doesn't get to the SEC title game, which I agree with you on that, CJ, that's kind of the floor, he's still got a chance to redeem himself by getting some big wins and going deep into the playoffs. So I think he's got a real shot this year at cracking the top five. I mean, he's only got two spots to go to do it. Back-to-back deep playoff runs, or back-to-back Final Fours, I should say, that will more than suffice for Steve Sarkisian to crack that top five.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, I'm going to take a second, everybody. Tell you about Autograph, one of our new sponsors. I'm taking this read over for Bobby Burton today. All right, we're pumped for the win in Ann Arbor. Would you like a chance to win $4 tickets to the Big House this fall against Michigan in honor of four national championships Texas has, hopefully five in 2025? These tickets are retailing for $600+. If so, listen up. And that means you too, Connor Stallions. You can't get in for free anymore. Our partner Autograph is dropping a pair of tickets on April 18th at 2 p.m. Central in their app. All you need to do is download the app and refer one friend successfully. User downloads plus signups from Wednesday, April 3rd through Thursday, April 18th at 11 a.m. Central Time to be eligible. For those that are new, Autograph is where real Longhorn fans get unreal rewards. By bringing fan content and communities into one place, Autograph is the first app that recognizes and rewards fans, turning their passion into access and great experiences. Co-founded by Tom Brady, who, yeah, the guy that does those Hertz rental car commercials now. One belief that devotion should be rewarded and the future of fandom belongs to the fans. Scan to download that the free Autograph app in the Apple App Store and use referral code ONTEXAS. That's referral code ONTEXAS. Join us and see where your fandom takes you. Hopefully Ann Arbor this fall for $4 a ticket. $4 a ticket to win, to watch a 10-point win over the defending national champions. Just go do it, Autograph.
It's a beautiful thing. I'm a ball on the budget, so a $4 ticket is news to my ears. Appreciate that, and appreciate the good folks at the Autograph app. All right, getting back to a couple of the questions here. My man David Keith Williams always has great stuff. He says, Rod, Jerry, and CJ, after hearing such positivity about Coach Choice, I wondered if he's among the best position coaches ever at UT. I'd like to know your views, gentlemen. I mean, just the
– Hey, Rod, should I even let you answer this? I know where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, just in that room, Stan Drayton was a pretty damn good one too. But, yeah, I'm a Coach Aquino fan, so I will just – I'm a little biased, so I'll remove myself from the equation. Coach Aquino was my favorite coach. And I just go look at his resume of great defensive backs that he put out into the league over and over again. And they preached the same thing, right? It did remind me, though, when I heard Cedric Baxter talking about Coach Choice, and I've heard Jonathan Brooks echo very similar things. And I talked to Rojo yesterday, and Rojo was saying almost to me this around the same vein and talking about Tashard Choice in the same light. Yeah. About someone who can relate to the players as athletes, as well as people, as human beings. And they believe he cares about them, so they're more receptive to the coaching. And they talked about him being the standard and pushing them continually to that standard, which is part of why the running back room culture is so unique and it is so strong. And so it reminded me of the way a lot of the guys talk about Coach Aquino. I'll just say that it reminded me how Coach Michael Huff talks about him and how Michael Griffin talks about him and myself and my man Nathan Vasher talks about him. Anytime somebody starts talking about Coach Aquino, they talk about him as being a guy that could be considered a father figure and someone who was irreplaceable, and you could not really kind of quantify the value and how valuable he was in their development as a player, but also as a person. And that's, it seems like the short choice is talked about in that way, Jerry.
Yeah. So I'm going to liven up the chat. So I'm going to say Sean Watson. moving on. So really here's where I'm going with my real answer is Will Muschamp.
Oh, that's good.
I think Muschamp's about as good a D coordinator in my lifetime in this business as I've seen in the college game. Look, you aren't handpicked by Nick Saban, win a national championship at LSU, right? He came to Texas when Matt Brown needed it, and he delivered at Texas. I mean, Will Muschamp delivered at Texas. Then, obviously, he had issues hiring the right offensive guys, but he also got the job after Urban Meyer at Florida and the job after Steve Spurrier at South Carolina. Good luck with both of those. I mean, those are jobs you're going to get fired but make a lot of money. But then what he helped do at Georgia, I mean, he's just one of the best defensive coordinators, one of the best defensive minds. I don't think Texas has ever had anybody as good as Will Muschamp as an assistant coach. I think he's just tremendous as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Hard not to choose Will Muschamp there. I'm a sit this one out because I was not following as closely as some of y'all in the chat, and obviously you two here back in the day when all these new faces were roaming the 40 acre. So I'll back up either of y'all's answers here. I'll go with that.
Yeah, if we're gonna go coordinators too, I mean, man, you really can get deep. I mean, hey, you can go way, way back. You know, Emory Ballard coming out. We talk about the wishbone. You can go that far back in terms of guys who actually had an impact a domino effect, a butterfly effect on the entire game with some of the things they were doing at Texas. Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I love your answer about Will Muschamp too, man. I loved me some Will Muschamp. Ain't no doubt about it.
Daniel Earp, Todd Orlando does not get a vote here. But I will say this. I was at the Cotton Bowl, Rod, that year, and when I saw B.J. Foster retreating the 26 yards off the line of scrimmage, I said, oof. This ain't good against Lincoln Riley, man, and Jalen Hurts.
No, not at all.
I think his internet may have jammed up on us a little bit there. Or he's got a perplexed look on his face. As Ryan Nelson said, Herb, man, that's a good one as well. Darryl White, actually, Antoine, really good football coach. Really good coach there at wide receiver. Still coaching. I believe he's at Boston College now. Obviously Fred Akers would have been a good defensive coordinator. Texas had a lot of great ones. Will Muschamp's tremendous. All right, let's reset the tables while we're waiting for Rod to jump back in. Scrimmage Saturday at 11. Big recruiting weekend. Over 20 combined 5-star and 4-star, CJ, in the 25 and 26 classes. I already dropped some nuggets. We have our weekend visitor thread on ontexasfootball.com. CJ and I'll be putting photos, tweets, everything in there all weekend. And hopefully some of you guys join in the fun and conversation as well. But I've dropped a couple of notes in there already. DeCorian Moore and his mom will arrive in Austin tonight. They're finishing up the district track meet. DeCorian should be running about 30 minutes here in the 4x100 relay. Then they'll finish up later this afternoon and head to Austin. John Mills, the offensive lineman from St. Ignatius in San Francisco, he gets in about 7 p.m. tonight. He will be with his father and one of his coaches. The Coleman brothers, Jordan and Devin Coleman, they're going to come in tomorrow morning, which a lot of people will do. So they'll leave in early in the morning from Dallas, get in. So some guys will be getting in. Jamie French obviously is getting into Austin today, flying in from Jacksonville. Malik Autry from Opelika should be getting in tonight at some point. So those out-of-state guys, some of those guys will be they'll be arriving tonight. KJ Lacey should be arriving tonight. They're going to be getting in Austin at different times, some tonight, some early in the morning. CJ and I'll be there tomorrow to take you through all of it. CJ, AJ Sports says, you mean DeCorian will be flying out in about 30 minutes? Yeah, he does flies down the track. CJ, Troy Hune is another guy that'll be flying in tonight. 26 quarterback. The 25 guys are going to get the majority of the focus. DeCorian Moore is the hot button topic in recruiting. Obviously, he's from Duncanville, 5-star receiver, committed to LSU, and Texas is very, very, very much in that fight. But Troy Hune's going to go under the radar this visit weekend, but he may actually be the top 26 quarterback on the board, him or Dia Bell.
Yeah, this will probably be the last time Troy Hune's on campus where he's not a focal point, and I think that's really interesting. Of course, coming in with this group of 30 to 35 plus 4- and 5-star guys in the 2025 class, that's kind of the expectation, is they get, the stage set beforehand. But Hune's been to Texas probably 4 times by now. He came last year for a camp, came again to watch Kansas State when Malik Murphy made his first career start here as a Longhorn. Again, just being back to campus, creating that and establishing that relationship with A.J. Milne and Steve Sarkisian is very interesting because, again, that 2026 quarterback class, Texas only has 3 offers out, one to Jared Curtis, currently committed to Georgia, the other to Dia Bell, who visited Texas earlier this year for spring practice. So right now for Texas to kind of, continue that ball rolling at the quarterback position, Troy Hune's the guy to watch very closely this cycle, specifically moving into 2026. Welcome back.
I think Rocky's back. The best 21 in Texas history is back.
Sorry about that, guys. I'm not sure what's going on. I apologize about the technical difficulties there. But yeah, I'm back. I appreciate you guys holding it down while I was gone. I know I kind of left in the middle of a Todd Orlando rant. Did we get that settled? Did we get the Todd Orlando?
No, I just said when B.J. Foster retreated the 26 yards off the line of scrimmage in the Cotton Bowl, I said I knew it's going to be a bad day because, Lincoln Riley's just going to do what he does to you at that point.
Yeah, I was actually a Todd Orlando fan too, but I will admit defense got worse, progressively worse, deteriorated the longer he was here. Hey, but I love the lightning package when he put the 6 DBs out there. I was a fan of that, and I think he was a really creative, progressive guy. Just obviously not the man for Texas long.
Hey, Rod, I want to get your opinion on something because you brought a good thought. It was a dumb thought, but now it's a good thought in. So one of the things that Anthony Hill said yesterday, CJ, I know CJ made note of this as well. Anthony Hill talked about Trey Moore in coverage yesterday. I thought that was interesting because you're going to see more three-man front with Trey Moore actually lining up at a linebacker as well versus that end edge guy position. I thought it was interesting, guys, that Anthony Hill brought up Trey Moore in coverage. That's not, I don't think, what people expected to hear yesterday, CJ.
Yeah, I don't think many were expecting that at all. You know, it's kind of looking back to some of the head-scratching days back, you know, when Malcolm Roach was dropping off onto a line or onto a running back in the slot receiver. You're sitting there thinking, yeah, this guy's strength is running the passer. But Trey Moore specifically, I think it kind of encompasses how talented of an athlete he is. You know, again, we've talked about in the past, Jerry, we actually ran into him on the way to the pro day. Yeah. He does not look like he had 15 sacks a year ago, just walking the street. You know, he's 6'3", 240 pounds. He just doesn't look like that guy that you would expect to have Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Texas kind of pursuing after a year of football last year at UTSA. But then you watch him in pads, and you're like, okay, I see it a little bit. And you see him get off the ball, and you're like, okay, that makes sense. And that's where he really makes his money, is that athleticism. So if Texas is asking him to drop back into coverage at times, I guess that's a little interesting because it shows that the staff trusts not only his athleticism but his football knowledge to know where things are, who's around him, what kind of scheme or coverage he needs to be in as well. That's really interesting, rather than just peeling the ears back and saying, go get that guy with the quarterback behind the line of scrimmage. You know?
Hey, Rod, so talk about Sorrell, Burke, and Moore on the field at the same time in some packages. That's what we're getting at right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some NASCAR packages, like they call them in the NFL, where you're putting multiple defensive ends on the field, edge rushers on the field, or you're putting your best pass rushers on the field. Either one D tackle, he could be that, and then a combination of defensive end or edge rushers, and whichever one can handle, you know, bumping inside. And this is a predictable passing situation most of the time. So I'm with you, Jerry. I think that actually is something they have to be working on.
Yes.
Considering what you have in Anthony Hill, you can move him around the edge. I think a guy like, you know, whether it be a Baron Sorrell or whether it be an Ethan Burke, I think they have the ability to bump inside temporarily and then have somebody else on the outside. You can do it with Anthony Hill. I mean, you really can. They do it with Michael Parsons all the time. They spin him down from the outside linebacker, bump DeMarcus Lawrence inside, and then you got nightmare fuel because those guys either can decide to just rush straight up in their gaps, or you can use your twists and stunts to start playing games with those guys, get that edge rusher matched up on a much less athletic interior offensive lineman. So I'm with you, Jerry. So the key to that is you got to get them. You want to get them in second and long and third and long. That's going to be the key. So you can win on first down. I am all about NASCAR packages. Yep. I almost wondered, I was talking to someone about this the other day, with Johnny Nansen coming as the co-DC. I don't think we've talked about enough of what influence Johnny Nansen can be.
Yeah, go through that, Rod. Go through that. Yeah.
Yeah, because PK's been influenced since he's been on the 40 Acres, which I love, by the way. Shows you that he's evolving. He's still a student of the game. You know, when Gary Patterson came in, you know, Gary Patterson showed him, gave him kind of the cliff notes of the Big 12. He became a match quarters guy. Start playing a lot more match quarters when they brought in Gary Patterson, because Gary Patterson, in the Big 12, the ecosystem of the Big 12, it really is one of your best coverage. It's one of your best solutions because it's basically a man concept still built into a zone. All right. So you can there's an old riddle, right? How do you cover more space with fewer defenders? Because that's the modern riddle of defense today in modern football, right? That's how are you gonna defend more space with fewer defenders? If you can do that, then you can be a great defensive coordinator. That's probably the first question when you interview a young defensive coordinator. Ask them that question and see if they have at least a creative mind to figure out how to do it. And one of the ways is match quarters. We're playing zone, but we're also matching up against man's wants to route declare themselves. So he was influenced by that. I think also, you know, he's going to be influenced a little bit by Johnny Nansen coming in. Johnny Nansen at Arizona. They played a lot of cover three. I don't know if you're going to be playing a lot of cover three. They played cover three at a top five rate in the power five. They've also played a lot more man coverage than Texas plays. Texas wants to play a lot more man coverage. I think that's something also you're going to see with Johnny Nansen. Johnny Nansen also more versatile personnel groupings. This is kind of what Jerry's getting at. While we might see some NASCAR package, right? Because they had a dollar package, which they call a quarters package in the NFL, with seven defensive backs out there. They threw that out there at times at Arizona. They also had a package where they had five down linemen at times to try to match up against more power run teams. So he was more versatile, I think, than PK, and I'm hoping that rubs off on PK. That with all these versatile athletes you have right now, Ethan Burks of the world, Anthony Hills of the world, Jadae Barron's, Makubas, that Jelani McDonald you talked about, that you have now some movable chess pieces, yep. gives yep. you more malleability, also gives you more solutions, and you should use that versatility. It makes you more versatile and more multiple as a defense, but also it makes your scheme more versatile. I think that's what you're going to see potentially from the Johnny Nansen influence on PK.
Yeah, one last thought here, and I see some chat, you know, some people in the chat kind of mentioning it doesn't make sense for Trey Moore to be dropping back. Well, you're probably right. It doesn't. But in the scheme in which we've seen PK and his edge rushers in the past, they're going to drop back every so often. It's not a big staple of this defense. I actually have the numbers here. Jet Bush had 51 snaps in coverage a year ago. Justice Finkley had 35. Ethan Burke, 32. A number of those came against Alabama, where he was very impactful, drawing attention away from him at the line of scrimmage, allowing guys like Anthony Hill and David Benda to blitz up the middle or off the edge there. Baron Sorrell had 15. So it's not uncommon. It's not a big staple, clearly. The other thing that tells me is, in the few moments that we've seen Trey Moore drop back in coverage in practice, it's standing out to Anthony Hill, which I think is encouraging there.
Yeah, because it's probably
– Go ahead, Rod.
Now, I was just saying it stands out because you don't see it very often, and it's like a kind of a fish out of water type of thing there. But I will say I think it's more of a tendency breaker to get it back to Will Muschamp. Will Muschamp had a great quote, thoroughbreds don't go backwards. Was once talking about Sergio Kendall and why Sergio Kendall doesn't drop back and Arakpo didn't drop back in coverage. He's like, no, thoroughbreds don't go backwards. So that's the real Muschamp quote. Maybe Trey Moore is in that category.
And here's the other thing with that, too, is no matter how much it's used, it's all part of player development, right, Rod? And Sark, he is all about player development. Colin Simmons will have to learn and develop a little bit in coverage as a player. And you know what? They want to. These guys want to do that. They want to be complete players. They want to maximize what they can do. It's also all part of player development.
Totally agree. And think about the modern game. And this is why Sark is big on player development and now big on versatility. Because the modern game, if you want to simplify it, you're simply trying to make run defenders into pass defenders and turn pass defenders into run defenders. Sark does it all the time. That's why he loves bunch formations. He just run duo out of bunch all the time because you get those little DBs like me in there, and I got to be a forced run defender. And he knows I don't really want to do that, all right? And then he wants to get you in packages, why he runs the pony package, two tailback sets, power packages, 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and then you put your run-first defense in there, your run-centric defense, run personnel, and then you turn those run defenders into guys that got to cover Jaden Blue on pass routes down the field or got to cover a JT Sanders. So for that, that's why you want to make sure that Trey Moore, in the situation that he is called to be a pass defender, we know he's a guy that's supposed to be a pass rusher, but if he has to be a pass defender, that is not he's not completely at a disadvantage. And that when you engineer those matchups, he's still a guy that can hold his own if he is in that uncomfortable situation. All right.
Rod, you're telling me you don't want to come off the edge at corner to come tackle CJ Baxter late in the fourth quarter of a game? That's what you're telling me?
No. And you know what? DBs haven't changed since I was playing it 20-some years ago. They still don't want to tackle CJ Baxter. We still don't. Most of us don't. There are some. You will meet a Quandre Diggs every now and then. Now, don't let the smooth taste fool you. You meet a Quandre every now and then who's ready to bring the ruckus. He loves that kind of stuff.
Hey, how great is it for
Quandre? Most of us don't like it.
Hey, how great is it for Quandre? Unless something drastic happens, he's going to have the hardest hit in history of Pat Mahomes, maybe the greatest quarterback that ever played. Hey, Quandre's in the record books. Unless somebody gets a shot on Pat Mahomes the next 6 years.
Hey, I'll say this. We asked him about that when we talked to him, and he says, man, me and Pat are friends. They're really good friends now. But every now and then when he said Pat tries to give him the business and take a shot at him, he'll send him that hit. Is that
you got to have that one locked on the camera roll, ready to fire at any point.
You probably got like a GIF of it ready to go, ready to roll there. All right. While we're talking defense, real quick, because I know we got some of the chats we got to get to, and we're getting close to the end of this thing. And we got some questions that we want to get to. AJJ Sports is in there, and I want to give my man AJ some love. AJJ, did I see that you were on a plane? Did you on that you were mid-flight watching On Texas Football? Confirm that for me. I thought I saw that, and I couldn't find it. I want to confirm that. Okay, here's the question, though, guys, about the off-ball linebacker opposite Anthony Hill. Because what I think is really, really just intriguing, and I think it's compelling, is that all the guys they have to play that position that are going to win that position, off-ball linebacker opposite Anthony Hill, their body types, yes, sir. I thought that was the case. AJJ underscore sports, mid-flight, baby. Hey, you might be the first. That might be the first mid-flight viewership we've ever had. I don't know. Mid-flight on the way to Vegas. Hey.
Good luck.
I'm shocked that flight didn't get delayed. First of all, right, go ahead.
There you go. The body types of these linebackers are so different. And I want to say their styles of play are so very different to me. I'm just really intrigued by what direction the coach is going to go. I mean, you got Mo Blackwell, hybrid, coming in there. You got Leonga Lafau, who I think for a lot of folks, he may be the front runner to win that position. You got David Bender, the only six-year senior, but he's built a little stockier, more to be maybe a run defender. You got Blackshear. He's huge. What is he, 255 or something like that? I mean, that guy's huge. So I'm intrigued by all the different types of linebackers they have there. They don't necessarily have a guy that fills out a certain frame or a prototype. It's going to be a lot of different styles of play at linebacker there and a lot of different frames at linebacker there. Who do you think wins it out? Who's the ideal one for that the coaches like the most?
You know, I look at it, having seen David Binda a week ago trot out with Quinn Ewers as, you know, that's kind of the guy right now at the linebacker spot next to Anthony Hill. I think we know that. We've expected that. It was his job last year before Anthony Hill came in and turned into Anthony Hill. You know, he was right next to Jalen Ford. We expected that step up. We saw glimpses at times. And I think that was enough for the staff to give him the nod, obviously, right now as the elder statesman in the room. That's going to have to continue. You're going to have to see him make more impactful plays, similarly to that sack against Alabama a year ago, which Texas loved to parade around after the game, you know, kind of showing the drill in practice where you got to do the army crawl, the bear crawl, the mat drills, and then go after and get the quarterback. That was, to me, a flash play that I wanted to see from David Benda. This year, it's got to be the consistency. He can't get lost in coverage like we saw against Kansas. Mm-hmm. He can't get picked on and the underneath routes like we saw against Houston. Those are two big question marks that we've yet to see in person, at least for us. We've heard about things behind the scenes, but until we see it with our own eyes, and the spring game will be an indication of that, it's a question mark, and it leads to this conversation. And that's why I look at a guy like Leonga Lafau as a possible long-term solution at that spot, because I think at 220, you know, he slimmed down from 230 a year ago. Let's keep that in mind as well. He slimmed down about 10 pounds, but he's still at that size where you can play middle linebacker in the SEC, especially if you're not necessarily the Mike, like an Anthony Hill at 243. So for me, Leonga Lafau, I think, bridges the gap very well from being able to play in the passing game and still being able to have the smarts in the run game and diagnosing plays in front of him, similarly to what we saw with Jalen Ford over the last 2 years. So, will it be a quick switch? Probably not. Again, moving into the SEC, you're going to want guys with experience, guys who have been on the field before and made big plays in big-time games. That's what David Benda provides for you. Yeah. Long-term, and whether or not we see a change eventually, I think Leonga Lafau is that guy for me that could push David Benda at that middle linebacker spot next to Anthony Hill.
Nice. Yep, good stuff there. All right, before we get to a shout-out to our wonderful sponsor once again, I got a question. AJJ underscore sports said, hey, Rod, if per se you were a defensive coordinator, how would you attempt to stop the pony package? That is good. That is a really good question. It all depends on the personnel that you have that you're running the pony package with. Like when they had Bijan and Rojo, I would definitely want to have more speed on the field. Bijan wasn't necessarily a great blocker, necessarily a lead blocker. They would use the power stuff with Rojo. So I'd probably go, because some people want to match up that personnel with a 40 personnel. 40 personnel essentially is four defensive backs on the field. And you match up run heavy sets with your, you know, 40 personnel, which is either four down linemen or three down linemen and four linebackers. And I would avoid that. And I think that's how Sark gets people. That's how he gets you. Which is why I like versatility. I want a nickelback that I really could use as a force run defender, or I'd like a safety that I consider to be a hybrid that I can put down in the box. I think that the key to really defending the pony package is having a defense that's malleable and multiple, because it's going to present to you a lot of different problems. Because if you basically match up your personnel, so your 40 with their run heavy sets, then they're just going to throw it on you. And they're going to use those guys like Jaden Blue and Bijan Robinson, the passing game, on your linebackers. And that's a matchup disadvantage for you. If you match up with sub packages with nickel or a dime, then they want to run the ball. Right. So that's why the versatility of defenders, the key to matching up with that is versatility. And one of the things that Nick Saban said, you don't practice against it. That's why it's also really advantageous. Teams don't practice against two back sets anymore. They don't. They practice against 11 personnel, 12 personnel. Those are the predominant sets you see all throughout college football. So you get a built-in advantage just working 20 personnel, just because, as Nick Saban said, the run angles are all different. He said the blocking assignments are all different. And he said it really puts a lot more of my pass defenders into the box to make them run defenders. So their angles and leverage in pass coverage are also all off too. So I would be, my thing is be versatile on defense. Versatility. You know, it's been my buzzword, word of the day, word of the month, word of the year for me. Versatility. Sark using it more too. That's how you match up with packages like the pony package that want to lure you into run heavy sets and run centric defenses and then throw the ball against you.
Yeah. Hey Rod, real quick, after you, CJ, I'm gonna tell everybody about autograph again, because I gotta get out of here in a couple of minutes. But go ahead, CJ.
No, I was saying that's just good stuff. How to, you know, how would you combat the pony package? To me, I don't have an answer. I'm an offensive guy, so good stuff, Rod. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, I just want to tell everybody about autograph one more time. One of our new sponsors. Thank you very much, the autograph. All right, we're all pumped for the game in Ann Arbor. I think all three of us are picking Texas right now, by the way. Kenneth Grant maybe too. I don't know. Would you like the chance to win $4 tickets to the Big House this fall against Michigan in honor of our 4 national championships, hopefully 5 in 2025? These tickets are retailing for $600 plus. So if so, time to listen up. Our partner Autograph is dropping a pair of tickets on April 18th at 2 p.m. Central in their app. All you need to do is download the app and refer one friend successfully from Wednesday, April 3rd through Thursday, April 18th at 11 a.m. Central to be eligible. For those that are new, Autograph is where real Longhorn fans get unreal rewards by bringing fan content and communities into one place. Autograph is the first app that recognizes and rewards fans, turning their passion into access and great experiences. Co-founded by Tom Brady, who, on the belief that devotion should be rewarded and the future of fandom belongs to you, the fans. Scan down to download the free Autograph app in the Apple App Store and use referral code ONTEXAS. That's our current referral code ONTEXAS. Join us and see where your fandom takes you. Hopefully Ann Arbor this fall for a $4 ticket.
Thank you, Jerry. That's awesome, brother. I know you got to get out of here and get going. So any last words for the people before you get out of here?
No, look, CJ and I, we're going to have you covered on texasfootball.com. We've already got the weekend visitor thread going. If you haven't registered it on football, on texasfootball.com, head on over there. For all you guys listening, by the way, on Twitter, which is over 2,000 right now, or watching us on Twitter or on the podcast, hit subscribe, hit like. That helps us a lot. We're going to be on the road a lot covering the recruiting this weekend. We got you covered. We'll be back with live streams here on Texas Football throughout the weekend, on the big recruiting weekend, and probably on the scrimmage as well. Texas fans, once again, thank you so much for all you do for us, joining in. Coffee and Football, The Winning Drive, Longhorn Live Streams, everything you guys do for us, very much appreciated. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate all your hard work, brother. And have a great weekend if I don't talk to you.
We'll talk soon.
All right. That's Jerry Hamilton. No BS. Jerry Hamilton did discover me. I'm not making that up. I was hanging out, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, because he came out to watch us work out. We were working out. It was a group of us, like some North Shore guys, some Houston Lamar guys. And back in the day, before they had all the 7-on-7 camps and all the guys would go to these definitely elite camps that were sponsored by big brands like Nike and stuff, we would just go try to find work. So we take our cleats with us, take a ball with us, and we'd hear like, hey, man, I heard those Madison boys are working out at this field. I heard North Shore guys are working out over here. And we would literally just go out there and like, we got next. Like, let's go. We got next. Right? We're trying to get in some work out here. Y'all trying to get some coverage, some trying to get some man-on-man coverage reps out here. And we would go out there and do one-on-ones, and then we do 7-on-7. And I believe Jerry was out there at one of those events, and he's already watching my boy Sapp. Sapp was an All-American already as a junior in high school. Went to Notre Dame. Just a freak athlete. Played for the Colts and played for the Ravens, too. I mean, just a freak. And they were out there to watch him. And lo and behold, I turned some heads, CJ. That's how recruiting works, though. You told me you had those stories, too. I came to watch one guy, and I left talking about another one.
Yeah, no, it's crazy how that works. And that's a – I mean, that's a hell of a story to now be up here with Jerry. I mean – full circle here, getting to talk ball again. So how cool is that? Eventually, I hope to be up here with a guy like, you know, the next maybe 21 or so at the University of Texas in 20 years from now. So we'll see. But that's a really cool story. And again, it just kind of adds to what we provide here at On Texas Football.
Yeah, no doubt, man. He was the first one to list any ranking with Rod B on. And after that, everything kind of blew up from there. All right, let's get to back to some of the questions here. How about this from Ashton Holloman? He said, do you guys think Sark ever tunes into the live streams? I don't know if he does. I would like to think that he listens to us. I've said before, I remember when Sark first got the job, and so go back to the pony package thing. You guys, just to let you know how long I've been talking about two damn running backs in the pony package. I said, if Sark comes out in a two tailback set, all right, to start the game, I would be the biggest Sark fan ever. I'll be a Sark fan for life. Dude, his first series was out of 21 personnel. I BS you not. The first series that he ever called here at Texas without 21. And I said that on the radio, and I was thinking to myself, is Sark listening? That's no way Sark's listening to the radio. Maybe he is. Maybe that's what's happening. I remember talking about the three high safety issue for Texas and how that was Steve Sarkisian's kryptonite. And I kind of presented how I think you should beat it. You present power personnel packages. You pivot to play action pass principles. Force the three high out of their disguise. Because the three high, the really unique strength of it is it's deception. It's disguise. Pre-snap, you really never know what it's doing because it's such a malleable defense. If you get extreme in your formations, extreme in your personnel packages, you force them to reveal their disguise. And then when they reveal their disguise, that's when you go, okay, they're just running cover three. Okay, actually, it's just cover four. But when it's coming out of a three high look, you don't really have natural beaters. You got two high beaters. You got single high beaters. So when that three high comes out, they're running the same coverages, same front, same pressure packages that all defenses do. It just looks funkier. And therefore, it makes RPO offenses, which Sark's is, RPO offenses really hard to operate because RPO offenses are just counting the numbers in the box. And if you can distort those numbers and the quarterback gets the count wrong, then the quarterback is wrong and he's off. Then he's inaccurate. The windows are small. So that's kind of where – and by the way, and then Sark started – that's how Sark beat the three high this year, guys. He beat – that's exactly the blueprint. So I'm not saying that Sark's listening to the live streams or listening to me, but I just say great minds think alike, damn it. And – that's why I think Sark is actually a damn good coach. I'm not saying he's a damn coach because he's listening to us, but he's a damn good coach because I see him adapt and evolve. And I watch this program and I look at it from a football theory perspective too, CJ. Like, hey, let's adapt, let's evolve, let's maximize. And I think Sark does that too. So I'm not saying he's listening to us, but I do think he sees the football world in a very similar light that I do. And that's why I'm a kindred spirit with Sark.
That's one of those reasons why I think you'll eventually see Sark inside of that top five of the list that we talked about earlier with ESPN ranking the top head coaches in college football. His ability to adapt and change on the fly has been something that has been a strength of his. You know, there's been times where you can question the play calling, the decision to go for it, whatever it might be. But when it comes down to it, Sarkisian has found ways to adapt, and he has found ways to benefit from advantages on the field that he's created through game plan, scheming, or alignment, which to me is one of the bases of what you want from a head coach. You know, we talked about it yesterday, Rod, on the winning drive. If you have a Stephon Diggs, but you can't get him the football, well, that's a red flag. You know, that's an issue. while your offense is still being able to score points, when it comes down to converting a third and six or a fourth and six, when it really matters, can you do it? Can your big-time players go make big-time plays in big-time games? To keep on with that typical phrase there, but so far we've seen that. Sarkisian's gone to A.D. Mitchell to seal the deal. He's walked off Alabama for 7 minutes behind his offensive line while going for it on fourth down. You know, that's an important part of the game there, and we've continued to see those steps year in and year out under him. So yep. Going into the SEC, while the game changes a little bit, I don't think it'll be a lot right now for Sarkisian to be outcoached or outmanned when it comes to Texas Longhorns taking the field this September whenever everything gets kicking off.
Yep, I agree with you, man. I love the way he adapts. You know, when something, think about the deep ball, right? Sark first gets here, he's championing how much he's going to throw the deep ball. It's a part of our offense. He's being stubborn about it. And then last year, midway through last year, when the deep ball still wasn't working, after two and a half years of trying to throw it and being below average throwing the deep ball and converting it, he decides to curtail it. He's like, nah, it's actually hurting us. We won't throw them. We won't throw them on early downs. We'll be very judicious about our deep shots now. Still going to throw it, but just not as obviously not as high volume as he once did in his first couple of years. That's him evolving real time. Even though he admitted, I really want to throw the deep ball, and it's a crucial, integral part of our offense. It was hurting them more than it was helping them. And I watched him, you know, change his philosophy a little bit. So that's why I love Sark. He is a true football theorist in the sense that I do believe he's a student of the game. And I think I can tell he steals things from the NFL, from the Shanahan tree, talks about that. The cheat motion that he used this year, took that from Mike McDaniel and company. So that's what I think Longhorn fans love about him, is that, man, he's always on the cutting edge offensively, and you can really count on that. He's consistent on it. Before we get out of here, let me thank our good friends over at Flat Creek Estate Winery. Guys, 11 awards in 30 days, including Double Gold Grand Reserve and Texas Grand Reserve at the Houston Rodeo. Flat Creek Estate Winery is raking in awards, and it's just a few minutes from the heart of Austin, Texas. Select bottles of the wines by Flat Creek Estate are now available at your local Specs, and now you can get a taste of what they're all about. Flat Creek Estate is also a gorgeous venue hosting events for the whole family all spring long. Take in the eclipse next week with a bottle in hand, and their winemaker's dinner on April 11th is the perfect date night. So folks, remember, eat, drink, and be awesome at Flat Creek Estate. For more info, please visit flatcreekestate.com. For more information, please go visit flatcreekestate.com. And thank you very much to Flat Creek Estate Winery and their support for their support. And I will be trying to find a babysitter ASAP, because I'm going to treat wifey to a day out there at Flat Creek Estate Winery. Give me some brownie points, because it looks fantastic. So make sure that you make plans to go join flatcreekestate.com or Flat Creek Estate Winery sometime soon here in the spring. All right, a couple other questions before we get out of here, CJ. Joshua Braddon. Rod, what is a position that you might worry about but actually might be a surprise, like running back last year? Yeah, running back. I thought there would be a regression in the running game. There was not really a regression in the running game. That was something I was wrong about. So something I expect to be to underachieve or to regress this year that may surprise me, I hope, is the interior D-line. I hope that it's the interior D-line. Because honestly, CJ, that's the only area of the team where I expect regression. I'm trying to think where, I guess punter, maybe. Punter, D-tackle, some of the only positions where I expect regression. Not a lot of places where we kind of expect some natural regression just because of the guys that are leaving and the guys that are replaced, the unproven commodities that you have replacing them.
That's kind of where I'm at as well. You know, you look at the offense, specifically receiver, you lose two first round wide receivers. Well, you go out and you add three pieces and you get a five-star from the high school ranks, three other talented prospects there as well. So you have a talent coming in. You know what the pieces are that can replace Xavier Worthy, Jordan Whittington, A.D. Mitchell. Defensively, you lose the Outland Award-winning defensive lineman and another first-round pick.
Yep.
That's a lot from a production standpoint that you don't necessarily know behind the scenes if what you have is going to fill the role there. That's going to be the question. I agree with you, Rod. That's, to me, the biggest question mark on the team. But like we've seen, you know, that portal window opens up in 10 days. And I don't want to speculate, but I can, you know, accurately and specifically kind of throw out a guess that Texas will be active in the defensive tackle portal market whenever that does open up. Who might that be? Go ahead and speculate down below, because I'm not going to sit here and act like I know who is going to enter the portal. It, of course, you can speculate. You can talk about the rumors, everything that we talked about to lead this show off. But at that point, until that happens and we see that name officially in the portal, it's all, you know, up for chance at the time. But I agree with you. It is at that defensive tackle spot for me.
Thanks, David Keith Williams. Hey, you know what? I will let folks know when I'm going out to Flat Creek State, because it's got to be something I plan way in advance. We got a 6-month old, so trust me, it'll be something we got to plan months in advance, David Keith. I appreciate that. Yes, I would love to hang out with some Longhorn fans. We'll try to make a day of it, too, so y'all got plenty of time, got some hours to come back and forth and kick it. I appreciate the love, man. This is a family here at On Texas Football, so we appreciate all you guys and your support, all your participation. It really makes my day, there's no doubt. CJ, before we get out of here, any last words for the people? Any last words, last comments for the people? I know you're excited. Texas got a scrimmage coming up this weekend. A lot of people excited about what could be really revealed in the scrimmage. Guys who could separate and elevate. I asked you this earlier about someone, what players or what group you expect to be talking about in a good way after the scrimmage. Let me ask you this: after this scrimmage, give me one name you expect, a person, one player. All right, one player that you think we'll be talking about after the scrimmage. One guy.
Yeah, Matthew Golden. I think we'll hear a lot about him. He's been consistent, and he's been reliable so far in practice, and I've heard great things. The hands have been there. When Quinn Ewers tells you a receiver has soft hands, Rod, that's a green flag for me right there. So
yeah,
I think Matthew Golden will find a way to make some noise this weekend.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's somebody on the defensive line. I'm hoping, and it's hard for those edge guys to make a real impact in a scrimmage. They're called off. They can't. They got to really, you know, they got to ease up. Probably, I don't know, 2 yards from the quarterback. It's really tough on those guys sometimes. But I do want to hear good things about those edges. We expect that to be a strength too. So I'm going to say, we've been talking about Trey Moore. I'll say Trey Moore. More about this dad. More about Trey Moore. No pun intended there. All right. Thanks to my man Matthew behind the scenes, who does a great job. Thank you to Flat Creek Estate Winery for all of their support. Thank you to the Autograph app as well. My man Jerry Hamilton, who was on with us earlier. Jerry Hamilton is one of the busiest human beings I know. CJ Vogel, thanks to you too, brother, for all the knowledge, man. You do a great job. We are so lucky to have you. There's no doubt about that. We are also lucky that all of you out there are watching and that you listen to us and that you consider this to be a family, because we do too. So thank you, because the On Texas Football community just keeps growing day by day. And it's because of you guys. So we are very, 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 very grateful to you. All right. So for the crew and for On Texas Football, until next time, join us here on the On Texas Football channel. And until then, hook 'em.